Sunday night football game, the Chargers improved to 7-3 after taking down the Steelers 25-10. And in the NBA, wins for the Celtics, Thunder, and Knicks.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tider Insider TV, Crimson Tide Kickoff, play-by-play for Alabama sports, and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports, Tide 100.9, and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, let's do this. Welcome into the Gary Harris Show for this Monday, November the 10th, 2025. I'm your host, Gary Harris. Wyatt Fulton on the other side of the glass today, sitting in for Chase Brumfield. So Wyatt will be manning the controls, taking your phone calls on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. We got a good show on tap for you. I'm going to run it down in just a second. Boy, a lot to cover from another busy sports weekend. We'll do that for you. First, though, I need to let you know this hour of the Gary Harris Show, as always, being brought to you by my good friends at Alabama Credit Union. Member-owned and not-for-profit, Alabama Credit Union really is a better way of banking. My friend Steve Swofford just retired after a long stint as the CEO of Alabama Credit Union. Did an unbelievable job. June Landrum takes over, though, and she'll just keep it rolling there at Alabama Credit Union. Again, find out more at alabamacu.com. Alabama Credit Union, loans for real life. Some rules and restrictions do apply. See if you're eligible for membership. Then join today and feel good about your money. And put a little extra change in your pocket. All right, we got the Monday lineup. Rodney Orr from Tider Insider coming up at 9:30 this morning, talking Bama football, and we'll also touch on hoops with Rodney after that impressive performance by the Crimson Tide at Madison Square Garden on Saturday morning. And then at 10:30, Casey Smith on golf. Also, your phone calls, as I said, on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. And if we have time, we'll get to Kalen DeBoer's post-game press conference from Saturday night following Alabama's 20-9 win over the LSU Tigers. And we've got a lot to cover with that game. And we'll start out by just saying that Alabama won. Okay. I did my social media analysis on Saturday night after the game. I did a live shot for the news. And so I want to say that before I say some stuff that may be perceived as critical. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about winning the game. And that's what Alabama did. And that's what they've done 8 times out of 9 this season, not since the opening game at FSU. They're 6-0 in the league. So that's the most important thing. So I want to give credit where credit is due, and I know, Wyatt, you probably agree with me. The goal is to win the football game. Having said that, when you're in the situation that Alabama's in right now and you are looking big picture, getting to Atlanta, competing for an SEC championship, getting in the playoff, I think you look at a team differently than a team, let's say, that's got 3 or 4 losses and is just trying to finish the season strong or get to a bowl game. You're a little more hypercritical. And what I saw Saturday night from Alabama against what I think, and again, I know they started out as a team that had aspirations for the playoffs themselves, a Heisman candidate at quarterback in Nussmeier, who got benched, by the way, the other night. Brian Kelly's been fired. But I don't think LSU's a very good football team. And I saw Alabama in that game struggle to put them away. And the thing that concerns me the most, and I know they're trying, I asked Ty Simpson about that in the postgame. You can see they're trying different ways, different players. The inability to run the football, I think that's going to bite them at some point. I don't expect them to run for 200 yards a game. I know you don't either. But I was thinking, you know, 125, 135 yards. But they have 56 yards rushing. I mean, it was non-existent. Jay Miller averaged 1.6 yards per carry. Every time they ran the ball on first down, they were 2nd and 9. They were 2nd and 8. They were behind the sticks. And you're going to see a team, and LSU played solid defense the other night. I give them credit for that. But you're going to see a team this coming Saturday that if you can't run the ball, they are going to try to eat your quarterback alive.
And LSU's not a good football team. They were not well coached coming into this game, albeit the Frank Wilson transition was better than what Brian Kelly had done. But that's not a good coached football team. That's not a fundamentally sound football team. Yeah, they got dudes, right? You can name names, Harold Perkins, the Weeks brothers, Mansoor Delane at cornerback as well. But they've got players that are not making plays at this point. So in terms of the talent level, you got to give LSU credit there for slowing down Alabama at that point. But they threatened. They dared Ty Simpson to beat him again. And Ty Simpson did in this ball game. But, I mean, there's a reason they weren't connecting on these deep shots. It's because LSU knows you can't run the ball. So they're just going to sit back and play the coverage game. And Simpson was able to hit a couple of nice dig routes, was able to hit, you know, Quavis down the far sideline there. But it still was just, this is one of the most frustrating run games I have ever watched in my time of watching football, not just at Alabama.
It is, because of your age, it is in your life. Really, you haven't seen. You have to go back to pre-Saban before you see. I think you probably have to go back to the Shula era before. And they had some good teams that ran the ball. But it's been, it's not in recent memory that an Alabama team has struggled to run the ball like this.
I've never seen Alabama fail to run the ball the way that they are failing to run the ball this season. I mean, Jam Miller's missed half the year, and he's your leading rusher with 300 yards.
And the other night, I mean, and it's not all on him. And I'm not saying that it is. But I don't know if he's gun-shy. I don't know if he's having trouble seeing the hole because he's not pressing it. But his first move usually gets the ball is those feet start stuttering, and he's looking to go horizontal. I mean, he's not. He's just not pressing the hole. And I
when you see that, that's when I start to get concerned about the running backs as a whole versus when you see Daniel Hill on the 5-yard touchdown, his first step right into the back at right.
And carries some guys with him.
And carries two.
I would like to see more of Daniel Hill on early downs have an opportunity to run the ball. Now, I know he did a couple times and he didn't have much success, but he did have the touchdown run and he had another run where he went inside the 10 where he went about 5 yards. And you're right. He got it up in there. He got those shoulders square. He ran behind his pads and he's 240 pounds. There's a difference there. And, you know, they used Bernard in the run game and listen, I don't know what you said about it on your show, but I admire Grubb for repping these guys with these gadget plays and then having the courage to run them and be successful with them. But even at the end of the game, when you've got the 4th and 3, you're going to win the game anyway, but you run a double reverse pass to get the first down. And it's like, my Lord. I mean, it's just, you know, in most situations on a 4th and 3, you probably run the ball there and feel like, you know, we're going to give ourselves a chance to get the first down. If we don't, we'll turn it over on downs and, you know, we'll play defense. But, and it worked. And most of the time he's dialed those up. But, I think that some of that is clever and some of that I think is the inability to run the ball in short yardage situations on 3rd down and 4th down. And so they go to other things, or they'll run a play with Bernard, because I mean, most of the time in the history of Alabama football, you feel like on 3rd or 4th and short that you can run the ball and get the first down, but this team doesn't.
No, absolutely. And I mean, we've seen this before from Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb. You go back to their days at Washington. I think about the 4th down in the Apple Cup against Washington State, where you've got it. They had an 1,100-yard rusher who had 16 touchdowns on the year in that season. And what did they do when that was a fourth and five, had to have it or you're losing this ball game? They ran a jet sweep pass to Romo Dunze, who flew his way down the sideline at that point. So it's something that we've seen a lot from Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb. But at the same time, this is Alabama. You should be able to run the football. I can't remember the last Alabama running back to go undrafted. And we could be staring down the barrel of that with Jam Miller if they cannot figure out how to fix this run game over the next 3 games of the regular season, maybe the SEC championship, and then into the college football playoff as well.
Well, we've got an all week to discuss it, and they've got all week to get ready. But this Oklahoma defense is going to challenge them in a way that LSU couldn't. And I agree with you. LSU's got some marquee players on that defense. they did some good things. But there's a lot of pressure on Ty Simpson right now because of the inability to run the ball, and because there's a lot of second longs and third longs, and he played well enough. You're right, Wyatt. He did enough. He, when it was time to make plays, he made them. But he missed some too, and I think some of that is the stress of the inability to run the ball, the pressure that he's under at times. And listen, you can't. Guy's thrown one interception all year. It's phenomenal. Versus what? Now he's got 21 touchdowns. You know, and but. When there's pressure, he's going to have to do a better job of protecting the ball. All right, we're going to get more into that. We're also going to get, obviously, more into Alabama basketball. What an impressive win. I can't tell you. Again, I had a social media post on this on Saturday video as well. I did not expect Alabama to win that game. I did not. I did not expect Alabama to win that football game. I really didn't. So, I mean, basketball game. So, what a win to go into Madison Square Garden against the Rick Pitino team with that starting lineup that's making, you know, over $5 million. It's reported that all those guys are 7-figure players on a Saturday morning and hang 103 on them. Even though Alabama got doubled up in the free throw attempts, impressive to say the least. All right, we got phone calls lining up. I tell you what, you guys hold tight. We're going to go and take our first break. Rodney York coming up at 9:30. Phone calls in the next segment. The Gary Harris Show is off and running. It's a beautiful morning, but it is chilly outside, and the weather is all over the place this time of year in Alabama. Freezing this morning. Going to be even colder tomorrow morning.
Thank you to all of our wonderful customers. If you need us, call or text 205-553-0958.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch.
He looks at it. When you give a gift from Hudson Pool, you're not just giving jewelry.
You're giving a memory that lasts a lifetime.
Shop in-store or online at HudsonPool.com.
Life doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages.
At Decades, it's not just food. It's nostalgia served fresh. Decades Pub and Grub, where every bite is a blast from the past, downtown at Timberson Square.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Cold and windy today. The sky partly to mostly sunny, the high 41. For tonight, we go way below freezing. The sky clear, the low 23. Tomorrow, sunny with a warmer afternoon, the high in the low 50s at 52. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 34 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You see him on WVUA 23 covering sports and on Tider Insider TV on Tuesday nights. Don't miss a minute of the Gary Harris Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11 on Tide 100.9.
All right, 916, welcome back in. And the phone lines are full. We are lined up with callers, so we're going to take Cowboy, Tom, and then Corey and Trustful in that order. All right, Cowboy, good morning. You're leading us off.
How you doing, Gary? Hey, I heard you and Watt talking about the Alabama run game. But if you do your history, Greg Byrne did not hire a running coach. They only averaged 118 yards a game 2 years ago at Washington, and that team that played for a national championship that lost to Michigan. They are a Pac-12 style offense with stuff they learned in NAIA football, DeBoer and Ryan Grubb, and they're gonna throw it most of the time. They set up a run on first down and second down just to kind of see what they need to do on third down, because once they get past the 40-yard line, their own 40, in a lot of situations, their strategy is four downs. They look at it four downs for 10 yards. And I just don't think you're ever going to see a strong running game, because that's not what they do. If you go back and look at
I've done that, and I agree with you. They're a quarterback centric offense, and I'm not disagreeing with you at all. That's the way that they've coached, and they've had great quarterback play. They've developed quarterbacks, but I think in this league, you've got to be able to adjust that some. And I don't have any visions of them ever running 200 yards a game kind of offense. I don't. I'm with you there, Cowboy. But I think you got to run it for more than 56 yards, and you're starting running back average more than 1.6 yards per carry. I think it's got to be better than that. And I think what you're saying is true, but there's a big difference between running it for 118 yards a game and running it for 56 yards a game, you know, or 56 yards in a game. So I think it needs to be better this season. I think it needs to be better starting on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, they won, though. But, you know, that's just kind of the way they are. And, you know, there's some – like, I don't think Daniel Hill would be a running back at a Nick Saban deal. He might have signed him as a running back. But I think he'd be a linebacker or a defensive end. If you look at his body type, he kind of fits that linebacker defensive end mode in that Nick Saban 3-4 defense. But, you know, it's an interesting situation. But, you know, Dan Lanning, Kirby Smart, and Steve Sarkisian, Nick Saban proteges. They like running the football. They're all 0-7 against Kalen DeBoer. I'm just pointing out the facts. Why should he change what he does? Dan Lanning is 0-3 against him, and he lost to him in a rematch. I'll tell you right now, Kirby won't beat him in a rematch. They'll get down too much in the game, and then they'll come back, but they'll be fighting uphill all the time. He's got a formula on these coaches that are Nick Saban guys. I mean, I'd like to see him prove my theory wrong, but if you look at the proof, it's in the pudding. He's 7-0
against. Well, I don't want him to prove your theory wrong. I want him to keep beating those guys if he plays them. So I hope you're 100% right.
I don't want you to be wrong.
You know?
But he's not running the ball. He's not running the ball on those guys. He's keeping the ball. That's the way they do it.
Well, like I said, the goal here isn't just to beat guys that coach for Nick Saban. The goal here is to win championships, and that's what he's going to be measured against. This is not Washington. This is not another school. So I agree with what you're saying, and at the same time, I want to see if they can get through, you know, finish the drill and put themselves in a position to win a championship, because that's what they're trying to do here. So, hey, great call, Cowboy. I got a bunch of other calls to get to. Good to hear from you, my friend. All right, let's get to Tom, and then we'll get to Corey, and then we'll get to Cam. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Gary. Good morning. Cowboy's right about the 118-yard average, but I would also point out 3 years ago in the championship game against USC, they blistered their ass for 347 yards on the ground. And so when it dictates, when the defense says, okay, we're stopping the run, guess what? They pass. And when they say we're going to stop the pass, they run. So you want somebody that's got a brain running your team, and I think they've done pretty good. On the LSU thing, that's like about a half a dozen teams. They had a week off. I know we did too, but everybody has a week off before they play us. And I admire LSU for coming out with the vim and vigor that they came out with and played with. They did a good job with what they had. And Nussmeier's never been a very good quarterback. I don't care what anybody says. The guy is not a top level quarterback. And, that hurts them. And Ty missed three or four passes that would have been touchdowns. So he's a little bit rusty, and I don't think it's a pass rush. I think that. But I to help the running game out, they need to run Ty a little more. See you, Gary.
All right, thank you, Tom. I don't know about running Ty a little more, though. I mean, you got to be careful running your quarterback. He's not he's not set up to run the way that Jalen Milroe was. The last thing you want to do is get him hurt. All right, let's go to Trustful and talk to Corey. Hey, Corey.
Good morning, Gary. How are you this morning?
Doing well. Good morning.
I just don't think this is a good matchup for Alabama this weekend. I think that this sets up for a loss for Alabama. As of Monday, I don't see Alabama winning this game. I just think that you're asking Ty Simpson to go up against a genius and defensive mind of Brent Venables. You're a one-dimensional offense, and what you're going to see is Oklahoma pin their ears back and come after Ty, and I could see him having multiple turnovers. And even though Oklahoma doesn't have the dynamic offense, they do have a mobile quarterback, and we've seen mobile quarterbacks give Alabama trouble, and I just don't have a good feeling about this game, Gary. I really don't. I mean, all season, and even going back to the summer, I've circled this game as a game I've been worried about all year. Even though Oklahoma's not been the team we thought they would be, because we don't have a running game, this one's really been in the back of my mind all year, and I'm still been very nervous about it.
Well, you should be nervous. I mean, Oklahoma's coming in here on a bye. They've kind of found their stride. They're good defensively. The quarterback Mateer's healthy. But at the same time, you know, Alabama's going to be ready for this game. And I'm not saying they weren't ready for LSU. I'm not saying they weren't ready for South Carolina. What I'm saying is that this is a game that also Alabama's been prioritizing. And they talked about that in the post-game press opportunity the other night, that, that they remember what happened out there. It was embarrassing. And, you know, they're going to get themselves ready to go. So great points, though, Corey, man. Appreciate your phone call. All right, let's get to Cam, and then we'll get to Phillip, and we'll get to Bryce. We've got to roll through them here pretty quick. Hey, Cam, good morning.
Good morning, brother. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Hey, man, I don't think Jam's been the same since that concussion and that collarbone, man. He's damn, it's just, anyway, hey, was it last year, some of those games, was it Milrow, the leading rusher on the team for some games?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, you know, of course, so, he was a dynamic runner.
Would you say this year's OC is an improvement from last year's OC?
And you mean at the offensive coordinator, is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I think this is the way this staff was designed to work in the first place. I mean, you know, Ryan Grubb was hired to be the OC when DeBoer took the job. And Sheridan, I think, was going to coach tight ends. Now he's coaching Cotter. But they were all together at Washington. So I don't know that I'm saying that he's better. I think, though, that having DeBoer, Sheridan, and Grubb all together is a dynamic offensive coaching staff. So I think that the coaching staff's in a better situation because they're all together.
Would you pick Milrow and Sheraton over Simpson and Grubb?
I don't do that kind of picking game.
Hey, man, last thing. Do you think we're overachieving this year?
No, I don't. I don't think they're overachieving. I think they're meeting expectations. I think this was a program, and I've heard some revisionist history about, oh, it was slipping under Saban. The last season Saban was here, they won the Southeastern Conference and played for the a chance to play the national championship game and lost to the national champion in overtime. This was a good program. This was the expectation. So I think that he's meeting expectations. I do not think they're overachieving. So just my take.
Sounds good, brother. I got to go, man. Go, Bama.
Thank you. All right, appreciate that. Let's get to Phillip, and then we'll touch up with Bryce here real quick. Hey, Phillip, good morning.
Hey, man, a few statistics for you on our running games this year. A.K. Deere has the longest run from scrimmage, came in week number two.
Right.
Got 56 yards. Then second, Jeremy Bernard has the second longest run from scrimmage this year, 25 yards versus South Carolina. And then the third longest run from scrimmage this year was Jam Miller had a 22-yard run versus Vandy in week seven. So those are your three longest runs from scrimmage this year. Now, a couple of interesting stats is the longest runs from scrimmage against Georgia were Jeremy Bernard and Proctor had 11-yard runs each in that game. And that was the top longest run versus Georgia from scrimmage. Bernard has had three of the longest runs in games this year. And Simpson has also had three of the longest runs from scrimmage this year. So we don't have a running back with more than one longest run from scrimmage in more than one game this year, the way I saw it.
No, I mean you've done your homework. Cowboy did his. You guys are, you know, putting out stats that are correct. And but I do think what Cowboy said is true, Phillip, in that they do use the run game to complement the pass game. That's true. And as White also pointed out, they had an 1,100-yard rusher one year at Washington. So they have been able to run the ball, but I don't think that's what they hang their hat on. This is a quarterback-centric offense. They've got a terrific quarterback to run it. They've coached him very, very well. I'm just concerned for me, and I might be wrong. I thought the other night the lack of a running game really impacted that offense's ability to do what we would like to have seen it do, which is score more points. And I think for the first time, I sat there watching that game thinking, man, they can't run the ball, and it's starting to impact Ty. It's starting to affect him in the passing game. So I don't have this grandiose idea that they're going to go out and start rushing for 200 yards a game. I don't. I would like to see them, you know, be able to run in these games for 125, 135 yards. And I think that would make their offense dynamic again. But when you can't run it at all, boy, it really helps those defensive coordinators. And I think that's where they're at right now. I think they've got to be a little more dynamic in the running game.
Yeah, they sure do. It's going to be a long day Saturday. And, you know, I look for Oklahoma to do some different looks on defense with our receivers. Oklahoma may back off a little bit as far as the line of scrimmage, and they may favor jamming our receivers a little bit more and just seeing what we can do running the ball. I don't know. But, you know, something's got to give. And, you know, that first possession we had the other night, that was indicative of what you were talking about, Gary. I mean, we had, what was it, three plays in a row where we couldn't get 18 inches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just couldn't jam it up in there and get the yards that you need. So, hey, thank you, Phil. Right.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. All right, we'll get to Bryce, and then we got to hit the break. Bryce, you got like 2 minutes, man. I'm already over. How are you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Yeah, I felt like we had got to Nussmeier, and this game was fixing to take a different route if they hadn't pulled him, because we had done rattled him. That last sack, he was fixing to start throwing picks and interceptions. I felt like we was going to blow him out if they'd have kept Nussmeier in. I don't know if you thought that, but I did.
Well, I thought the defense played really well, and you might be right, but they did take him out, and that's not impacting what I'm talking about offensively. Yeah, the defense played one of its better games. I mean, statistically, they were good. They got to the quarterback. They turned him over. They held him to under 300 yards of offense. I mean, it was a good defensive performance. Yeah. So, yeah, I have to give Kane Wamet's crew a lot of credit. But, again, they were facing an offense that's not very good. You have to take that into account as well.
Well, that's true. However, where did he just come from in left field about Daniel Hill being a linebacker, man? You got a running back like that can run and catch the ball out of the backfield like that? Well, it's just coming out of left field. And some people seem like they've changed their tune, don't they?
Well, you know how we all are. We're week to week, you know, based on what we see.
I feel a little chipper about our team. I mean, I couldn't wait to talk to you about that,
Gary. I knew. I figured you were listening very, very, very closely to what as you call him, our associate had to say. So, all right, Bryce, appreciate you, man.
All right, man, I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All right, 9:31, we're going to get to the break, and we're going to come back with Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com, Tider Insider TV, next here on the Gary Harris Show.
If you haven't already, you've got to try Tuscaloosa's unique breakfast, brunch, and lunch concept. Brick and Spoon, downtown Tuscaloosa, Timberson Square. It's fresh food with a Cajun flair featuring a full bar with build-your-own Bloody Marys and mimosas. Open daily, 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. Available for after.
Contact Courtney White at 205-242-5127. NorthRiverTimberCO@gmail.com. North River Timber Company.
Los Tarascos has been serving Mexican favorites like burritos, fajitas, and quesadillas since 1999. Their new location is at 4100 Owen Parkway in Northport. And of course, you can find Los Tarascos in Tuscaloosa at 110 Skyland Boulevard. The bar areas feature big screen television so you can enjoy your favorite sporting events. Los Tarascos features daily happy hours
and all your options for cancellation.
Call Wesley now for your free exit info kit. 800-656-1155. That's 800-656-1155.
Find Tide on Twitter at Tide109 to keep up with show announcements, guests.
Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. It's time for Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com. Great second segment that rattled off a lot of phone calls, a lot of people interested in this Alabama team. We heard everything from, do I think they're overachieving, to they don't really want to run the ball, to what can we do to run the ball. This is Alabama football. When you're 8-1 and you're 6-0 in the league and you're top five in the country and people aren't satisfied, and then you've got another program in this state, again, and Auburn's a good program, but you've got one fan base that's giddy over losing 45-38 in overtime to Vanderbilt. So just laying that out there. Good morning, Rodney. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. You've got, let's hit on LSU first before we look ahead, because you got a really good piece on Tider Insider, Bama in position to prove it's a top team. But let's start with what we saw Saturday night. I'll just say for me, I won't speak for you. You can respond. I thought it was a frustrating game to watch. It was not an easy game to watch. There was not a lot of rhythm for Alabama in that game offensively. And I understand, my callers have pointed it out, that this coaching staff has never been a run-first offense going back to everywhere that they've coached. I get that, but 56 yards and you're starting running back averaging 1.6 yards per carry, I think they aspire to run it better than that. And because of that inability, LSU was able to hang around, even though I thought it was one of Alabama defensively, one of their better games. But in the end, they got the win. That's the bottom line, 20-9. But I just was frustrated watching that offense not being able to get it going. And Ty made enough plays, give him credit, but the run game was just, it was non-existent the other night, Rod, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and it pretty much has been, I think. You know, obviously Vanderbilt, they ran it a little better. Jam had 136 yards in that game. You know, I mean, that's a lot of stuff you rattled off.
It is.
In terms of what people are saying and this and that and the other. So, try to figure it out here. You know, look, as far as what they hope to do offensively or what they've done in the past, listen, they had a 1,200 yard rusher in 2023. They ran the ball pretty well. They might have run it differently, maybe, than what, or different from what Alabama people kind of have seen here in the past. But they have had success running the ball. Now, whether or not it's a top priority, I would disagree that it's not a top priority. I think they definitely want to be able to run the ball. I mean, obviously they want to have balance. I think they want to be able to obviously use the weapons that they have on the outside, throw the football, use every part of the field. You know, so all of those things I think are important. And I don't diminish the run game in terms of the importance. So. It's right now, look, I think it's a matter of having all the personnel that you need, partly. I don't see a big time back out there. I don't see a guy that's got a lot of vision, a lot of instincts, running the football. I think actually, now I don't know Jam with his injuries, how much that set him back, the shoulder, and missed the early part of the season, came back for Georgia. Then of course he had the concussion against Missouri. You know, maybe he's still not back to, and I don't mean 100% health, but 100% in the rhythm of what he's trying to do. But I just don't see a big time back out there. And I'm not sure that the offensive line is consistent in terms of the run blocking. But I'll say this, I think there are opportunities that they miss because the running back is not seeing it. So I think that's part of it too. But I do think there is, certainly a desire to be successful running the football. And I'll say this, if that desire is not there, they're sure wasting a lot of first downs running the football and maybe second downs too at times. So they're calling a lot of run plays where, you know, I think there's people, I even hear it in the press box, you know, just forget running it, just let Ty throw it. So I do think there's a desire to run the football and to run it a lot better than what they have.
All right, you mentioned Jam struggling, particularly the other night. You know, and they've got five running backs, maybe even six on the roster. They don't go very deep in a running back rotation. It seems to be two backs. Hill's moved ahead of Riley for that second spot. Dre Washington, we haven't seen him. Obviously, A.K. Deere is a talented freshman who has the longest run from scrimmage this year of anybody in an Alabama uniform. He's probably not ready to do the other things, but I guess I'm asking specifically about Hill. Should he get more opportunities in the run game than he has received because of the struggles of Jam Miller? And do you think we will see that going forward?
Well, first of all, let me be clear. I'm not at practice every day. They see what they see every day. So I'm pretty confident that Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer kind of have a good idea who should run the ball. Would I like to see Daniel Hill more just kind of sitting up there watching? Yeah. I would like to see more because I see, you know, some things. He certainly runs with a lot of power. He drags tacklers at times. We saw that he bowled into the end zone from 4 yards out. We carried guys 2-3 yards. You know, he gets on the edge, but even though he's not an extremely fast guy, he does get on the edge quickly. Just seems to have a little bit of a instinct about it. You know, he's an outstanding receiver as well. So would I like to see him get more touches, more runs? Yes, I would. But again, you know, I'm pretty confident that they know what their guys are capable of doing. So that that would be my answer to that. And maybe we do see more of him, you know, as it goes along. Maybe we see more of him this week.
All right. Again, I preface anything that I say by the fact that Alabama's getting it done and where it matters most, and that's win losses. You know, the results are there. I mean, 8 wins in a row, 6-0 in the SEC. So I want to be clear on that. I'm nitpicking on a team that's, you know, top 4 in the country here. But as you point out, Bama in position to prove it's a top team. And I think it's a real, really well-written piece. I encourage people to go to TiderInsider.com and prove it. And your point is that they're in position, but you still got to finish the drill. And this Oklahoma team is not going to be a gimme at all, coming off a bye. The quarterback Mateer is healthy. This defense gave Alabama fits a year ago. The head coach, as a defensive coordinator, has had success against Alabama. Then you've got Eastern Illinois. Then you got the Iron Bowl. And I don't care if they don't win another game. That's going to be a tough game down there. So nothing is in the barn. The hay's not in the barn yet, Rodney. I think that's what you're pointing out. All you've done now is set yourself up in a position to do something special. You still have to go finish.
Right. No. And listen, I don't think people are wrong. I don't think fans are wrong. People say, well, you're 8-1, and I do think that means something, obviously. I mean, obviously, where you are right now. But some fans get upset because people are complaining or picking out things. The reason fans are picking things or nitpicking is because they're looking for – this is the expectation. It's championships. So what is it going to take? What do people think it's going to take for Alabama to win out the rest of these games? Win the SEC, go get into the playoffs, potentially win the national championship. So that's why people pick things apart. It's not, hey, we're glad to be 8-1, everything's great, because it's not perfect, and it never really is. But that's why Alabama fans are used to winning championships. So they are going to nitpick. I don't think there's – why someone would, you know, wonder why they would do that. It's just it's part of it. But anyway – with that said, yes, Alabama is in position. They've done an incredible job to get where they are after the debacle at Tallahassee. So they've done a fantastic job. But still, right now, they have to beat Oklahoma. They have to find a way to win that game. And as you mentioned, go to Auburn, win that game. If they lost both those games, they'd be out of the playoffs. You know, if they win both those games, they would go into the postseason, in my opinion, one of the 2-3 hottest teams in the country, because you've won 11 in a row against an absolute gauntlet. I don't care where Auburn is in terms of their record or their program. You have to go down there. It's a tough, really tough environment to play in. It's going to be a tough game. So you go through this gauntlet. You finish off with Oklahoma and Auburn. You win those two. You really can say, hey, you know what? Right now we're right where we want to be. We're one of the best teams in the SEC, maybe the best, and we're going to go try to win a national championship.
Ty Simpson has played really well this year, and I think he is the major reason. Others as well, but I think his play at quarterback is the main reason Alabama has the record it has. I thought the other night, and again, this is me. I'm just asking you to react to my opinion. I thought, I'm not going to say rattled necessarily, but I think that the lack of the running game, the stress on the passing game, the second and longs, the third and longs, some of the pressure that LSU was able to get, I thought it affected him and impacted him in the game.
Yeah, I thought so, you know, a little bit. I thought he got a little hurried at times, missed a few throws at, I don't know if he was uptight on those deep balls. He threw one of them, I thought, too late to Lightsear Brooks. The other one, he just overthrew it. Ty can make those throws easy, you know. He just didn't. You know, there is a lot on him. I mean, it's him. That's why I said last week in the preview, this passing game has to have rhythm. It has to get back in rhythm. They have to find ways to get back into the rhythm that they had. Because it's going to be what carries Alabama. If they're going to have a chance in these games, they're going to have to connect on those throws. They're going to have to – it's going to be with the passing game doing it, you know. And hopefully the run game can contribute to it in some ways. But I think that's the real key. is it's going to be on Ty's shoulders. And I think he's done a really good job for the most part. But like you said, in this game, he missed a few throws. And again, he didn't have the greatest protection at times. Things broke down. He was under a lot of pressure. I mean, they're sending house, right? I mean, this is what you can expect from Oklahoma is a lot of pressure. They're going to come after Ty, try to get him out of rhythm because they know Alabama's what? Pretty one-dimensional yeah. right now. And if they can throw him out of rhythm, throw this passing game out of rhythm, they're going to be in good shape.
Rodney Orr with us from TiderInsider.com, Tider Insider TV, also part of the Inside the Trenches podcast with Wallace Gilberry and Andre Smith. And we'll have an episode coming up tonight at 7 o'clock. Defensively, and I have been up and down or on the fence on this scheme since Kane Womack came here, but they played pretty well this year. And then Saturday night, and again, that offense I think has got issues right now, but still, the bottom line is the bottom line. 232 total yards, 59 rushing yards given up, three field goals in the game, held them to 13 first downs, 5 of 14 on third down. I mean, it was a really good defensive performance, Rodney, by Alabama on Saturday night.
Yeah, I thought so. I think they're playing pretty well. And again, like in our preview, we said last week that the defense just really has to keep doing what it's doing. It's not dominant. I'm not sure maybe Ohio State has a dominant defense. I don't know. They haven't played a lot of competition, in my opinion. But I would say this, that this defense is doing things. I mean, they're creating turnovers. They're making critical plays. They're doing things in the red zone to keep people out of the end zone, forcing field goals. They forced three against LSU. Well, really four. One was missed. So they're doing a fantastic job, I think, overall, in terms of just the bottom line, getting results. I mean, they'll get gassed here or there. They'll give up a run. They may give up a throw. But their bottom line is they're keeping people off the scoreboard in terms of, you know, getting in the end zone for touchdowns. They're doing better on third downs, I think. And they're playing – they play with some enthusiasm now. They're playing with energy, which means to me, I mean, they have a really good grasp of what they're doing. You know, they feel confident in what they're doing, which, we saw earlier in the season, I think, that that confidence was kind of – there was some uncertainty on that side of the ball. But now they really seem to be playing with a lot of confidence.
All right, your assessment of this matchup coming up Saturday afternoon at Saban Field at Bryant Denny Stadium against Oklahoma.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously I hadn't seen a ton of Oklahoma. I mean, I've seen some. I did watch the Tennessee game. I thought they were really impressive in that game to be able to go to Neyland Stadium and win the game the way they did. But, you know, again, Joey Aguilar, that Tennessee offense put up nearly 500 yards. It really didn't dawn on me until I looked at it. I said, well, you know, Tennessee actually had a lot of success in that game offensively against a defense that everyone lauds as maybe one of the top two or three in the country. And I do think that they do a fantastic job. Venables has a great defense. Todd Bates, former Alabama player, he's one of the top defensive line coaches in America. He's doing a fantastic job with that defensive line that they have, developing their players. I know they're really good up front, and I say that because – I talked to my Oklahoma guy last night, great source that I have, and he said, look, he said, if Alabama can find ways to protect Ty Simpson, and if he can also make some plays with his feet in terms of avoiding the rush and, you know, getting outside, making some throws, they've got a real chance to take advantage of Oklahoma's secondary. He thinks they're good, they're decent in the secondary, doesn't think they're great, think they have some holes there that Ty and these receivers can really take advantage of, just needs to make sure that they get the protection that Ty needs to deliver the ball. And, you know, again, that defensive front that Todd Bates has put together, their linebackers that they have, they're really good. You know, Venables is going to bring a lot of pressure. So it sounds like to me, just kind of talking to people on that side, that that was really a kind of something that would give me a lot of confidence. If Alabama give him some protection, I think they can do what they do with these receivers and have some success.
And it's going to be a fun game. And I'll tell you something else, Rod. Of course, this is Alabama in November. It's freezing this morning. It'll be cold in the morning. It's supposed to be like 74 at kickoff on Saturday. It's supposed to be absolutely glorious. So that'll be good too. All right, I'm just a minute or so left. I do want to ask you about just your thoughts on what basketball was able to do Saturday. I told you before the game I didn't think Alabama would win that game. Going to Madison Square Garden on Saturday morning, jam-packed New York crowd, a St. John's team that has national championship aspirations, has a starting lineup that, you know, all those guys are making seven figures, and Alabama went in there and scored 103 on Rick Pitino. Unbelievable performance. Just your thoughts on what you saw from the Crimson Tide against St. John's.
Yeah, well, let me say this. I got in the YouTube deal, you know, and this Sling TV package, I had it the week before and watched all the games. Well, I went to order it, I don't know what happened Saturday. That's basically what I'm saying with Sling TV.
You didn't get to watch the game live, is what you're saying.
No, I did not. I did not get to watch hardly any. Oh, I had to watch Penn State, Indiana on my phone. But anyway, I say all that to say this. No, I did follow the game, though. But when Rick Pitino says not once, not twice, maybe three or four times, that team is really hard to guard, that speaks volumes, you know, to me, coming from Pitino. And to go up there in a game that, you know, to be honest with you, if you'd asked me, okay, before the game, make your prediction, I would have felt that probably Alabama would have come up on the short end in this game. But to be able to go up there and do what they did was pretty phenomenal to me. I mean, Bol Bowen had the I thought he made a strong contribution inside. I know he had, what, 7, 8 rebounds, something like
nine,
that.
Nine, I think.
Nine, okay, yeah. Good. Well, he was really a strong factor, obviously, and that was great to see, because I know rebounding certainly been a question for this team, you know, kind of early on, what the prognostications were that it could be an issue. But with all that said, no, I mean, to be able to go up there and have that kind of success is really good. But what about now, the excitement for this upcoming game against Purdue?
Number one, really coming to town, and much like the football game, Purdue didn't number on Alabama last year up there. I mean, that you don't see Alabama get whipped like that very often. So what a big week. Yeah, you got the football game on Saturday. You got the basketball game later this week with both kind of payback games. So should be fun. Hey, great stuff, Rod. Quick word about Tider Insider.
Right, TiderInsider.com. It's only $48 a year, and you can get instant access right now with your credit card if you prefer. There is an address there to send a check, but it gives you all our premium information. You mentioned the column yesterday. We'll have more today. And then, of course, our all-sports forum, that's part of it. A lot of discussion right now. I mean, it's back and forth with basketball and football right now.
All right, and I'll visit with you and Walt Wallace and Andre tonight on Inside the Trenches and Tider Insider TV tomorrow night.
This season, Target's got you covered with the best deals for endless fun. Shop in-store or online, and step into the holidays with Target. Restrictions apply.
Since 2011, Billy's Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big screen, high definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar, and its free Irish pub. Often imitated but never duplicated, Fridays at the Free with me, Gary Harris, this fall at Innisfree Irish Pub, 1925 University Boulevard in Tuscaloosa.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky
Clinic.com and change your life. That's right, guys. Change your life by going to PrimetimeMensClinic.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Cold and windy today. The sky partly to mostly sunny, the high 41. For tonight, we go way below freezing. The sky clear, the low 23. Tomorrow, sunny with a warmer afternoon, the high in the low 50s at 52. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 36 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You're listening to The Gary Harris Show.
Oh, my.
Streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
There'll be peace when you are done.
All right. right, 9:58. That's going to wrap it up for hour number one. Boy, we didn't stop. Great phone calls. I appreciate our phone callers. We'll have more time for phone calls in the second hour, plus Casey Smith on golf at 10:30. If we get an opportunity to get to Kalen DeBoer's press conference from Saturday night, I want to play that because obviously he had a lot to say. This hour has been brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. Hour number two is coming up. Gary Harris, Wyatt Fulton, the Gary Harris Show for this Monday, November the 10th. We'll continue. The second hour is on the way.
This hour is West Alabama real-time news update from the Tuscaloosa Thread Newsroom.
Here are the Tuscaloosa Thread headlines. A freeze warning is in effect for tonight through 9 a.m. Tuesday for all of West Alabama. Wind chill temperatures near 20 degrees. Eight U.S. Senate Democrats help Republicans pass a deal to end the government shutdown. But as the bill goes to the House, Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville isn't sure House Democrats will buy in.
I'm hopeful. I don't know whether I'm optimistic. You can't count on the Democrats.
Most House Democrats are voicing opposition. Tuscaloosa's Veterans Memorial Day ceremony is set for 10 tomorrow morning at Veterans Memorial Park. I'm Don Hartley.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Brianna Murrow.
Jahmyr Gibbs had himself a day in the nation's capital.
Detroit toss to Green. Inside the 20, inside the 10, inside the 5. Touchdown, Detroit Lions, 44 yards.
Yes, sir.
Jahmyr Gibbs putting together a day, and the Lions have opened up that lead. It is now 41-16.
Lions Radio Network on the call. They topped Commanders 44-22. The Rams improved to 7-2 after knocking off the 49ers 42-26. Matthew Stafford becomes the first player in NFL history with four or more passing touchdowns and zero interceptions in three.
Squeeze lemonade are the perfect play call for your party. So before kickoff, remember that football starts with Foo. Foo Sackley's, proud partner of the Crimson Tide.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tider Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, here we go. Hour number two of the Gary Harris Show for this Monday, November 10th, 2025. I'm Gary Harris. Wyatt Fulton in today for Chase Brumfield. He'll be back tomorrow. Of course, Wyatt will be coming to you at 1 o'clock for the Deep South College Football Show, too. And we got the Miller's Edge coming up at 11. And, of course, Fowler this afternoon will take you home with a game from 2 until 6. Hey, we're going to get to some Kalen DeBoer audio. Bama in the NFL, though, is something that I do on my TV sportscast every week and on Tider Insider, and I try to cover it here too. And another busy day yesterday. Jahmyr Gibbs is a stud. Why? He is so good. And the only thing that's frustrating about Jahmyr Gibbs is that he only had 1 year here, and in that 1 year, that Alabama team that lost to Tennessee and that lost to LSU, that was a national championship caliber team.
Absolutely.
But he is so special. His gear and powerful too. But I mean, these are NFL football players. When he just leaves them in his wake, man.
He looks like he's gotten stronger since getting to the NFL. And so, I mean, you had the speed that, mm-hmm. you know, makes everybody look mm-hmm. ridiculous. And then you add on that he's got this power now. I'm so mad he's in Detroit, dude. I'm a Packers fan. He's in Detroit. It's not fun playing against them.
Yeah, but he had a huge game yesterday for the Lions. Jameson Williams had a huge game for the Lions. Over 100 yards in receptions and a touchdown.
That's another one I'm mad he's in Detroit.
Yeah, they're good. And you know what's interesting is they had not – the Lions had not been kind of hitting on all cylinders. Dan Campbell took over play calling duties, and they lit up the Commanders. Commanders are struggling. Of course, obviously, Daniels is out. And frustrations yesterday against the Lions, and this is a Bama in the NFL update. Deron Payne, and it's unfortunate because he was just absolutely responding to Amon-Ra St. Brown had hit him earlier, and he got caught swinging at St. Brown, and he has now been suspended for a game. Ouch, that's not good. And you know, when you're suspended by the league like that, you have to forfeit your pay. He may appeal it. I don't know. His teammate Javon Kinlaw said that St. Brown had punched Payne a couple plays earlier, and that the refs saw it and didn't do anything about it, is what Kinlaw said. He said it's some bull, you know what, 100%. But at the same time, that's a bad break for the Commanders, which they're really – this is a team that after last year, there were high expectations in Washington, and it's kind of gone off the rails there. Derrick Henry, speaking of the run game, Wyatt, I'm a little bit frustrated right now because and the Ravens are starting to turn it around. Listen, I still think they're going to win that NFC North. I think you probably do as well. AFC, I should say, because the Steelers are not going to hold up there, I don't think. I think that the Ravens are coming. They're only a game back now. They've won three in a row. But Henry yesterday there was a point in the game where I think he was at, and I just need to pull up the box score, but I think he was at like, he got his yards per carry, even though they didn't use him on the goal line one time, which just continues to tick me off. But he got his yards per carry up to like five carries in the game. And then they got a nice lead over the Vikings, and Vikings were having nine in the box, and they kept trying to run him. So he wound up with 20 carries for 75 yards, which is not great. No touchdowns.
And I think you are starting to see – I hate to say it.
Don't say it.
I don't want to say it.
You're going to say the age is starting to kick in.
But I think you're starting to see it take a toll on Henry. All that being said, he's still a top 10 rusher in the NFL. He still has six rushing touchdowns. We're only at the midseason point. So yeah. He's on pace for 1,400 yards and 12 touchdowns. So the fact that we look at that and say, yeah, it's starting to catch up to him, absolutely ridiculous. He's a gold jacket guy.
Oh, no doubt.
Like, he's at the point in his career that he's reaching top five all time in certain statistics.
Sure,
I mean,
absolutely.
I think he ends top five all time in yards and touchdowns.
Well, yesterday, I guess what frustrated me the most, and I had red zone going, but and listen, the Ravens are trying to win games. I'm watching it more from the perspective I want to see Derrick Henry do well. So it kind of jades you a little bit. But first and goal at the one, and Justice Hill, who gets one carry on the day. I'm sorry, they scored the touchdown, but Derrick Henry, first and goal on the one, deserves first crack at that. And you bring Justice Hill in for one carry, and he gets the touchdown?
You have a 6'2", 250-pound behemoth who has, even though I just said it, doesn't look like he's slowed down at all. Why is he not getting that carry?
I know. It just almost seems unfair. I mean, that's just – but, the Ravens, though, have won three in a row. They're a team to watch. Also, and I don't know, listen – I have never had turf toe. I have had a stump toe, but I know that turf toe is really difficult for an athlete, particularly a football player, because you're on, and especially a quarterback who's kind of having to push off. And so I don't know what's going on with Brock Purdy other than they understand, they being the 49ers, that they have got something in Mac Jones. So there's absolutely no need to rush back Brock Purdy, but Mac Jones is playing at a Pro Bowl level. I mean, I know they got beat yesterday by the Rams, who they had already beaten once, and that's because Matthew Stafford and the Rams offense just lit up the 49ers defense. But Mac Jones went 33 of 39 for 319 yards, three touchdowns. He did have one pick, but And Kyle Shanahan said, hey, these are two separate issues. Brock Purdy's our quarterback, and he is. They've invested franchise quarterback money in him. So I have no doubt that when he's healthy, he will be back. But Mac Jones has earned an opportunity with somebody probably down the line. Also this, Wyatt, I say when he's healthy, they're not going to bring Brock Purdy back until he's 100% now because of the way Mac Jones is playing.
Nor should you. I mean, like you said, Mac Jones, I mean win-loss, win-loss, win-loss. That's basically been what they've done under Mac Jones. But you look at these next stretch of games here, the Cardinals, who are without Kyler Murray because Call of Duty apparently is back out. The Panthers, who are – I like Bryce. Their defense is bad. That's a bad defense. The Browns and the Titans. You can go 4-0 there with Mac Jones, bring Brock Purdy back for this final season stretch against the Colts, Bears, and Seahawks, and – all of a sudden, San Francisco's back in the playoffs there. And then, like you said, Mac Jones, he's absolutely earned that right to get a shot somewhere else. I don't know where that shot may be, but There's not 32 starting caliber quarterbacks in the NFL, so Mac Jones will get his shot somewhere else. And on the turf toe thing, that's a brutal injury. We saw that slow Julio Jones down a couple of seasons ago. So
over and over.
Mac Jones, great kid. Loved watching him here in Tuscaloosa, and I'm excited to see where he does end up if he does move on from San Fran.
You know what's so interesting too, Wyatt, and we'll just go ahead and do this whole segment on Bama and the NFL because there's some other guys I want to touch on. Mac Jones' rookie year with the Patriots was really good. Really good. Ended up in him being in the Pro Bowl. Now, being in the Pro Bowl isn't what it once was because there's so many opt-outs and all that, but still, he had a really good year. Josh McDaniels leaves to take the Raiders job, and Belichick goes brain dead and puts Joe Judge and Matt Patricia, who's an incredible defensive coordinator and has done an unbelievable job at Ohio State, but he puts them in charge of the offense. Absolutely stunted the growth of Matt Jones, really killed his opportunity in New England. So suddenly, you know, we're a reactionary society. Oh, he's terrible. He's awful. He really wasn't awful. He was just in a bad situation. I mean, he got out of there. He flashed in Jacksonville when he was filling in for Trevor Lawrence. And then the team that wanted to draft him number three overall and would have had there not, I think that's, he would have been the 49ers quarterback. But there were other reasons that they didn't draft him. It wasn't the head coach. Shanahan wanted him. You know, he winds up there in that system, which is perfect for him, and he's revitalized his career, like a lot of these guys have done. Well, you know, this is a bigger picture type thing, Wyatt, but it just in Bama in the NFL. But when you're a quarterback, and he was not drafted as high as he probably would have been, again, if Shanahan wanted to take him, but still, he was a first-round pick. When you're a first-round pick at quarterback, particularly if you're a high first-round pick, the pressure on you to perform is so great that when it doesn't happen quickly, fans go crazy, and these guys get washed out. And what we're seeing now is talent is talent. And whether it's Darnold or Baker Mayfield or Mac Jones, that talent's still there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely that talent's there. I mean, there were times when Darnold was at the Jets and you're watching him and the Jets suck, and then Darnold flashes and it's like, oh, that's why he went, you know, number three overall there. And so with Mac Jones, he's got all the talent in the world. I mean, he was a starting quarterback and a national champion at Alabama, a Heisman finalist as well at Alabama. The talent is absolutely there. And you see guys like Kyler Murray, Trevor Lawrence, even Bryce Young, people start to get frustrated because the team is not good around them. Well, let them go to a different situation and watch them flourish like Mac has, like Darnold mm-hmm. did, like Geno Smith has for a couple of seasons now with the Raiders and the Seahawks. And so happy for Mac. I'm excited to see where he can kind of continue to grow and learn and develop. But that Shanahan system, the Shanahan-McVay tree, perfect spot for Mac Jones.
Same game, Brian Robinson Jr. They're starting to integrate him into the offense a little bit more. Understand that Christian McCaffrey is a dynamic back, but can't do it all every play. B-Rob yesterday, 8 carries for 41 yards and a touchdown. He trucked a linebacker on that touchdown. He just ran over the guy. He's playing really, really well. You mentioned the Panthers. And this is the problem when you're a team that's trying to get over the hump. You had an excellent opportunity yesterday after you go to Green Bay and win, all right? And the Bucs lose yesterday. So if you win yesterday, you know what? You're going to be 6-4. You're going to be a half game back of the Bucs. You're at home against the Saints. You're at home against a bad team. And this is why it's so hard in the NFL when you're where the Panthers are at to take that next step, because everybody in the NFL is a professional football team. And we're seeing this now in the SEC. There's no carryover from week to week. The Packers lose to the Panthers. Panthers go into Green Bay and win. You're automatically thinking, well, they're going to go home and they're going to beat New Orleans. And it didn't happen. And what's so frustrating is I really like the way that Bryce is playing. He's playing within the offense. He's doing what they need to do to try to win games with the run game. But I'm just frustrated. 124 yards passing yesterday, an interception. He's been playing better than that. And against the Saints team that I'm thinking, you know, he's going to have an opportunity to light them up. it's just frustrating. I mean, the Panthers are right there, and they're still 5-5. I mean, they're still in the hunt. But you're suddenly a half game back in the division if you win yesterday.
Absolutely. And for the Panthers, it's the offensive line, right? Bryce is making magic out of nothing.
Yeah,
I mean, they're pretty bad. And so, but because he's the quarterback and because he unfortunately did have two turnovers, he lost the fumble and he threw an interception. He's going to shoulder the blame on that when they couldn't run the ball for Jack Squat yesterday. 3.2 yards a carry on 23 carries. And nobody but Teteroa McMillan was doing anything in the receiving game. I mean, Jatavion Sanders, who was thought to be out of the league a couple of seasons ago, was their second leading receiver with 32 yards.
Yeah, bad loss yesterday. Bad loss, another way. Speaking of bad losses, because we do the Falcons report with D. Orlando Ledbetter. Listen, Raheem Morris is a nice guy. In fact, he's so nice. Arthur Blank loves him. I did not like the hire. I think he's a good coach, good on somebody's staff. I don't think he's head coach. And if you follow the Falcons, I mean, there's like this is the they epitomize snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Did it again yesterday over in Berlin against the Colts. And give the Colts credit. Colts are playing great, but the Falcons blow another one. Now the Texans, after having a couple tough losses with Davis Mills at quarterback, come from behind and beat the Jaguars. Huge win for them in the AFC South. So, and then tonight, speaking of Bama in the NFL, you're going to have it everywhere tonight, man, with the Eagles and the Packers. Yeah, and Wyatt Sporting his Green Bay hat in there. What's the weather going to be? It's going to be cold up there tonight. I bet it is.
Cold as all get out. They're saying it was snowing last night in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
It's going to be cold.
So 30-degree weather, maybe.
Okay, so you got two of the best teams in the NFL, and you got Bama guys everywhere, man. I mean, you got Josh Jacobs for the Packers, Xavier McKinney, and then the Eagles. It's like just they're everywhere. So a great Monday night game, frozen tundra at Lambeau Field, so that'll be great. All right, it's 10:18. We better get to the break. And got Casey Smith on golf coming up at 10:30. If you want to squeeze some phone calls into the next segment, 205-342-9904. And I may try to get some of the Kalen DeBoer audio if we have time as well from Saturday night, the Crimson Tide head coach. And before we hit the break, let me talk to you real quickly about my friends at Game Day Health here in Tuscaloosa. Get in the game. It's very important if you're a man that if you're having some issues that you acknowledge them and understand that treatment is available. And it's not very, very hard to do. Just go to Game Day Men's Health, located at 1013th Street East in Tuscaloosa. They offer convenient, expert-backed care for all men looking to feel and perform their best. They'll do your blood work and have the results back for you in 15 minutes. And they can get you started on a program to feel better. Testosterone health, erectile dysfunction treatment, weight loss therapy, peptides and vitamin therapy. Let me tell you something. If you are dealing with fatigue, stress, poor sleep, low libido, weight gain, those aren't just everyday annoyances. They can be signs your body needs support. At Game Day Tuscaloosa, they get to the root of these symptoms and deliver treatment plans tailored to your goals. It's a no-brainer. If you're a man and you're struggling with energy level, weight gain, not being able to perform the way you want, get back in the game. Go to Game Day Men's Health, 1013th Street East in Tuscaloosa.
Real, Cypher Supply, Banks & Company of Hardware, Stephen Fikes Allstate, B&B Transmission, Primetime Men's Clinic, South Spidus Roofing, and Cajun Bistro.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Cold and windy today. The sky partly to mostly sunny, the high 41. For tonight, we go way below freezing. The sky clear, the low 23. Tomorrow, sunny with a warmer afternoon, the high in the low 50s at 52. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 37 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Alabama Crimson Tide lives right here.
Down to the pylon! Touchdown, Alabama!
On Tide 100.9.
There's Bon Jovi. We're waiting on you, John. Richard Sambora and the boys. All right, 10:22. Since we don't have any phone calls, and we were phone call heavy early in the show, I don't usually get around to playing Kalen DeBoer from Saturday night. Of course, I say that we may be getting a phone call. Wyatt, if we do, I'll take it. I don't want to cut off the phone call, but I'll have a final segment and maybe able to get to Kalen DeBoer. I like to try to play some Kalen DeBoer audio from Saturday after the game, but yeah, let's go ahead and take our. We're going to take a phone call here because I'm not going to cut a phone call off for Saturday night audio. I see JR is getting ready. Wyatt's getting him hooked up here on the line, and we'll take his phone call. But I do want to try to play some Kalen DeBoer for you because I think he was relieved that they won the game. I don't think that he was totally satisfied with the performance, much like the fans. All right, let's get to JR. Hey, JR, what's going on, buddy?
Hey. Hey, Gary, that was quick.
I was just about to punch in Kalen DeBoer, and when the phone rang, I was like, "Well, let's hold up," because I don't like to not take phone calls if I
got it
for content. Well, so great. When you got through, we said, "Let's go ahead and get you on." What's going on, man, my friend?
Not much. I've been listening to your show, and you're talking about especially with your guest caller. I can't remember. Forgot his name. Anyway, that's happening too much to me now. But anyway, talking about the offensive rushing woes we're having, and how you were kind of thinking it was more really the offensive line blocking, rush blocking than it is the running back. It's hard to really pinpoint that exactly, but. What do you think it's going to take to improve that, or do we just going to have to be more one-dimensional?
Well, I think you're not going to reinvent yourself this late in the game. I mean, this is not going to be a great rushing team. Having said that, I do think that they need to run the ball better than they did the other night. But like some of our callers have pointed out this morning, JR, this offense is not designed to have a heavy running game to be successful. But I think they need to run it better. I think they can run it better. It's not, I'm not a coach. It's not for me to figure it out, but I think that they're working on it. I think they want to run it better. Ty Simpson said the other night, Wyatt was in there. I was in there. We were sitting there listening to him. He said, we want to run the ball. The running ball sets the tone. The running game sets the tone for the offense. So, but what they can do, JR, I don't know, because I thought the other night against that team was going to be an excellent opportunity to run the football. I really did.
So did I.
And they never got going. So, but at the same time, I got to be fair. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about winning the game, and they're doing that. They are doing that. So I don't know, JR. I'm going around the world here because I can't really answer the question. I don't know what they can do to run the ball better at this. Nine games into the season, but I hope that they can.
Well, being that we're playing Oklahoma coming up, what do you think? Do they have a real good rush defense?
Yeah. Well, they got a good defense. Period. Now they got lit up pretty good by Tennessee, but they got a great defensive front, both against the run and pass. They got some dominant defensive linemen. They're really physical defense. They're well coached. They'll be schemed up well with Venables, their head coach, being a defensive guy. So yeah, you're going to face a defense, I think, and they're going to have a lot of confidence based on what they were able to do to Alabama last year out in Norman. So you're going to face a big challenge on Saturday. I think Alabama's offense, in my opinion, will have to play much better than it played this past Saturday if they're going to win the game.
Do you think that kind of says like we might do more trick plays? Can get them on their heels or something? Because, a tough defense, sometimes you have to.
Here's the thing. I don't know, JR, how many more trick plays can you run? I mean,
we did a few.
If you look at games, it's whether you call them gadget plays, trick plays, off-script plays. Alabama probably runs, and I don't watch every game, but I see Alabama running as many gadget plays as anybody else in the country, and they've been effective with it. So I don't know. I think that they'll run some. I think that Grubb seems to be able to continue to dial up things that catch defenses off guard. But I would love to just see the opportunity to line up and get some yards.
Yeah.
Hey, why catch that phone right there?
Running straight at them on first down, I don't know.
It hadn't worked well. It sure hadn't worked well. No, and that's one thing I thought about. I thought about this, JR. Can you get jam out on the perimeter some? And the screen game is something they've not been able to be a good screen team, and you would think that that's a way to kind of counter the rush, maybe even with some draws. And so hopefully we'll see some new wrinkles in the running game, and they'll have some success on Saturday. I hope so.
I do too. Great.
Thank you, JR.
Great talking with you, Gary.
I appreciate you, my friend. Good to hear from you. All right, let's keep it rolling with we're going to squeeze these calls in before we hit the break. Ellis, hey, what's going on up there in Manchester, Tennessee?
Hey, what's up?
What's up, Gary? Brother?
I just wanted to say that I know we'd love to run the ball, but right now it don't look like we're going to, so we just had to keep doing what we're doing right now and win the game.
I agree. I mean, that's the bottom line. The goal is to win the game, and I don't want to lose sight of that, and I'm trying to make sure that I preface all my comments by being fair in regard to, you know, there's a lot of other teams, most other teams in the country that would swap places with Alabama right now. I want to be clear on that.
Yeah.
Also, though, as I said, Ellis, it's not just about being good here. It is, and Rodney pointed this out, the reason we're so hypercritical as the standard here is to win a championship. And that's what we're gauging this team against. We're not gauging this team against, you know, somebody called earlier and said, do you think we're overachieving? Heck no. I mean, this is the expectation. So, but they are winning, man. And to go through the stretch of games that they went through before the bye, to win all five of those in the SEC, four against ranked opponents, and then come back and beat an LSU team that, while I don't think they're very good, they're capable, they've got good personnel. But all I'm saying is, my point is, I think it's going to get ramped up this Saturday. I think this is going to be a high-level football game, because let's keep this in mind. Oklahoma hasn't thrown in the towel. They're thinking, you know what? We went out, we can get in the playoff. And beating Alabama would be a step in that direction. So this is going to be a high-level football game with two motivated teams. And for Alabama, it's an opportunity, I think, to make a statement, much like they did in the Georgia game, even though that was on the road. I think right now, even though they're 8-1, Ellis, and they're 6-0 in the league, I think, you know, I think there's some doubts as to, you know, is this team an elite team? Well, you can come out Saturday and you can make a statement inside Saban Field at Bryant-Denny Stadium. If you handle Oklahoma, I think people will say, yes, this team has passed every test, and they're in line to be a team that can win a national championship.
I agree. You know, and like Ty said, you know, they want to run the ball. I know they do, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, we just can't get the running game going like we should. But I'm not futzing about it, because like we just said, we're winning ball games.
Yeah, that's right. So. That's right. And that is the bottom line. Hey, thank you so much, Ellis. I'm going to try to get one more call in here.
Yes, sir. Roll Tide.
Appreciate you, my friend, always. Let's get to our pal Jeff up there in Tennessee. Hey, Jeff.
How's it going?
Good. We're going well, man.
I've been on, but not all the weekend, but mostly after the Florida game here. Florida fans complaining about losing to Kentucky. Guy wrote a Lexington Herald. He wrote a column about, I guess, the old time power of the SEC. He was talking about Auburn and Alabama and Tennessee and stuff. And he was talking about if you lose to Kentucky in football, it could mean your job, even if there are a bunch of examples through the years. That, you know, of course, Freeze got fired. Oh, you're on different ones, a couple of Tennessee coaches and stuff. But, you know, Kentucky won't ever get the respect that they really deserve. They'll never get it. I don't care what they do. But they won back-to-back SEC games. I know it's not a big deal.
They did do well. That's those are two big wins for Mark Stoops. I won't play that down at all. For them to go to Auburn and win, and for them to beat Florida, Jeff, those are two big wins. And they got a chance to get.
The thing about it is that their fan bases is ticked because of the way we beat them, and it's like this. I told a guy, I got a couple friends that went up there near Lexington. I told a guy on a YouTube chat, if Kentucky doesn't commit those two turnovers, they got back-to-back SEC shutouts. They shut out Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
They turn the ball over right before the half. They go down tied up at three. And the other night, it was 3-0. They punt to us. Guy muffs a punt. They get it inside the 15-yard line and score it. And make it 7-3, and then we scored the rest of them. If we don't have those two turnovers, we got back-to-back shutouts. You think they're talking about us if that happens?
Well, that would be impressive if they could have done that. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I'll just say, I told the guys on NC, I said, if they can beat Florida, which I don't think they could be in that bad, Kentucky's going to win out, in my opinion. Now, they got a tough team this week. They better be ready this weekend.
Yes, sir.
They've never been 10-0 in the whole history of the program.
They're number five in the country in the 1AA level. They've got a couple of players. A player I watched in high school is a beast over there. They better not come out flat, because if they do, they'll get beat.
That's
then
right.
They got Vanderbilt and Louisville. Now, they can beat Louisville. They beat them with Lamar Jackson. They can beat them. And then Louisville got beat tonight. California beat them in overtime. That Vanderbilt, I'd like to take Pavia and put him in a vice somewhere.
Yeah.
I think Kentucky will win out and be 7-5.
Well, that'd be a heck of a comeback. Hey Jeff, appreciate you, man. Hey, I gotta hit the break.
Lineup offering fuel efficiency, advanced technology, and plush comfort. Tuscaloosa Mazda, 3100 Skyland Boulevard East, or online at TuscaloosaMazda.com.
Covering University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:37. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show, and it's time to visit with my friend Casey Smith on golf and so much football and basketball. I get it, but an exciting golf tournament, the Worldwide Technology Championship in Mexico, was. We expected to have a lot of birdies, and we did, but it was a fun tournament. It kind of announced the return of Nick Dunlap. We'll get to him in a moment. But good morning, Casey. How are you?
Hey, doing great, Gary. Thank you so much, and hope you're well.
Doing really well. And we're going to start at the top, and that's with Ben Griffin, who I know he's only won three times, but when you look at the calendar, where those wins have come at in the time frame, with what he was able to do to outdistance a field where a lot of guys were going low and win by two strokes. He's a Ryder Cupper. I think he's announced himself as an elite player right now on the PGA Tour. Casey, would you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you got to keep in mind, this is a guy that quit golf 4 years ago to become a mortgage loan officer just because he sort of had lost his confidence in the game. And then some guys some just regular old guys encouraged him to go back and try it again and sort of help fund that. But, I mean, it's just how crazy golf is. It seems like we talk about something like that every week. He goes and he had two wins this year going into this week. He had 11 top 10s. Ryder Cup, top 15 player in the world, 11.7. He's won now. And he goes and puts a new putter in after having this incredible year with this same putter. And he said he's had it since Pebble Beach, which is way back in the year. Puts it in and goes and is number two in the field in strokes gained putting. And now goes on to get his third win. And, he shot 65, 65, 66, 63. And I think it really tells you a lot about where he is as a player. Then you're coming down the stretch on 18 and you just cruise in and make a birdie with all of that on the line and how, deep you are. It really is impressive what he's doing. He is, as you said, texting me, like, he's become an elite player. I mean, this guy's one of the best players in the world. And, whether you look at him on paper and see that when you watch him hit or whatever, he's gotten significantly longer from last year to this year. And then the proof's in the pudding. I mean, 11 top 10s is 11 top 10s. And there's really not a lot of players out there. There's only really two, but really one that stands with more consistency in his performance, and that's Scottie Scheffler. I mean, if you just look at the year of 2025, Ben Griffin had a top three year.
Almost for Nick Dunlap. Almost. Nuclear in the first round. Shoots 11 under 61. Phenomenal. Was cruising again in round two, and unfortunately had not missed a fairway the entire tournament. And then in that second round, and I'm trying to pull it up, I think it was 16, but he missed a fairway, had a lost ball, wound up making double bogey there. Still shot 67. Now, don't get me wrong. He still shot 61, 67 the third round bidding, because he came back with 65 yesterday, but that 71 third round is really what kept him from winning the golf tournament. I mean, the other three rounds were plenty good enough. So there's good and there's bad. He didn't win, but he did get a top 10, and he was one poor round away from as well as Griffin played. If he just kind of is in line with what he shot those other three rounds, let's say he shoots 68 on Saturday. He wins the golf tournament, Casey. So a lot to feel good about with Nick Dunlap, although he will not have the benefit of these wide of fairways again probably on tour this entire upcoming year.
Yeah, I mean, congrats, I think, to Nick. Had a great week. I mean, I went to compare both Ben Griffin and Nick Dunlap because the margins are that thin. I mean, both really equivalently. Nick Dunlap had two eagles, 26 birdies, three bogeys, and one double. The double bogey was the killer. Ben Griffin had one eagle, you know, 30 birdies, three bogeys. I mean, so you're just that double bogey that Nick Dunlap made on that one swing, and that's the driver yip thing that came back. But one thing I did notice was he is playing a ping driver this past week, which is his old driver. He's been under contract with TaylorMade. He's playing a ping driver, and I'm sure they wanted him just to get some game back and confidence back. So something there that he wasn't liking in the driver. As I said before, maybe it's a new driver. Maybe it's going back to an old driver. Maybe it's just finding something you're comfortable with. And obviously it's there. I mean, to go make 26 birdies and two eagles, he's got to feel great about himself. He's not in the field this week in Bermuda, which is a little shock to see. Most of the others are. I figured he might just parlay, try to just keep this momentum going. I would assume he would play the last event of the year in Sea Island because Bama played the SECs there. It's in Georgia. It's close, I would think. But we'll see how that shapes out. Yeah, I thought there's a lot to build on. I mean, I watched a lot of most of the rounds, and, you know, at least all the coverage that showed him. I fast-forwarded through. He looked good to me, really good. I mean, you have to. You shot 61, 67, 71, 65. And you're right. That's that. The Saturday round, it was playing tougher, and he really needed to shoot a little bit better than 71. And then that double, he's close. I mean, if you're in the top 10 on the tour, you're really close to winning. And he led for a bit, and that was the good part. It didn't look like he was rattled at all when he was leading. He's obviously very comfortable under the gun and around a lead. So I think, you know, that's a big step in the right direction for Nick Dunlap.
It really, really is. And as I said, I recorded Friday's round, Saturday's round, and was able to watch a lot of yesterday. And you know, nobody was going to beat Ben Griffin yesterday. I mean, the guy went out and shot 63 to close, but a nice final round for Dunlap. And you're right, some momentum. I'm with you. I don't know why you wouldn't want to come back and play this week. I know that every one of these, and I call them teams because they all have their team, they have a formula, but it just, why do you think he's not playing this week?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's because it's a long way from Cabo to Bermuda, and he's sitting on a 2-year exemption, and
yeah,
you know, and I, you know, it's really windy there, and what you just said, it's not as easy to hit fairways, and maybe they're thinking, you know, confidence, let's not wreck confidence, because I'm sure he's got someone helping him sort of block that out more than just like a caddy. I mean, there's definitely an agent, and they're going, hey, you know what, his swing coach, we got this back on the rails. Let's find the next place we can keep this thing building. You go somewhere where it's really windy, and it's going to be really windy, and you're having to start tee balls, you know, out of bounds over water that's coming back. You know, not the place to go build confidence, probably, in terms of the, and it's really, truthfully, it has just been one club for him for the most part, just the driver. Yeah. And so I think maybe that's it. It'll be pretty benign at Sea Island. It's pretty wide there for a driver. I would just expect him there. I hope we see him there. Yeah. And yesterday, look, and he turned 4-under and he eagled 10. I thought, whoa, I just did text you. Hey, he needs a, you know, scorching hot round. I thought, here we go. And, he bogeyed 13, but he came out with two birdies and kept it really respectful. So, I think Nick Dunlap is back on the right track, trending in the right direction.
Yeah, it was a good tournament for him. Lee Hodges, four rounds in the 60s, which is always credible. He finishes tied for 40th at minus 15. I want to ask you about another guy that's been highly inconsistent with a lot of talent from Alabama, is Davis Riley, and he missed the cut on the number. Now he's done enough. You know, he'll win a tournament, you know, to keep himself, you know, exempt. But you've talked about his golf swing before, and I'm just curious as to why. Can you put your finger on why he is not playing better, more consistently, and misses a lot of cuts, has a lot of, by tour standards, high rounds, and you feel like that he's got a golf swing that he should just be a much more consistent player than he is? What's holding him back?
You know, if you look at it, he makes about half of the cuts he plays in. That's about on average, maybe call it 60%. And then he, you know, again, like, this is what, his fourth year out there, and he's got $10.8 million in career earnings, $2.4 million this year. It's strange. He goes out, has, like you said, the win exempt. He's got a second. He's got three top 10s, four top 25s. But there is something in there that causes, and it's usually dry driver, big miss, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you just can't overcome that. That there wasn't enough firepower. This is more of a shootout. And, you know, he shot still under par for the tournament. He's minus four and missed the cut. So it's not like, you know, he didn't shoot. He shot just crazy high numbers. But, yeah, I think I would expect better golf. But, I mean, you know, maybe that's where it is hard out there. And he's still at 72nd, right, and 94th in the world rankings, but the 72nd in the FedEx Fall. And so it's one of those guys who think at some point he may just click, right? He may go on a tear because his golf swing does really look great, and usually good mechanics hold up under pressure.
And Tuscaloosa's Pat Gesiaer, good tournament. He finished 16 under, so he was tied for 31st. All right, give us the update. What all is going on? Big picture game of golf. 72 holes now for Liv. You have texted me. You think there could be some more guys from the PGA Tour that go over there? You know, anybody from Liv thinking about trying to get back on the PGA Tour? Where do we stand with the global game of golf now? DP World Tour, Liv, PGA Tour, what all is happening?
Yeah, I think that Liv thought, you know, getting to 72 players, they're better players. That was a way for them to retain all the top talent. Because if you play four rounds of golf, the better player is going to ultimately win out more than it's not. And their best players are the top guys or the draw. They want to win more in majors or compete more in majors. And I think that's where that came from. It's a way to really pay the top players through their performance. I think that, like, Cam Smith, I heard he was behind that. He felt better at four-round events. Bryson was about four rounds. Rahm was about four rounds. So the top guys, I think the older guys probably like that three-round shootout. I don't, you know, who knows where they are. I didn't think that was going to do anything to help them get ranking points. It really doesn't. It's just how their churn is. How would you let people on the tour, how their pathways to the tour on and off? I don't know if anyone is trying to go from there live back. I think they're trying to... Liv decided to have basically a Q school event in Miami, and then the PGA Tour, because it's in their backyard, decided that anyone's going to be suspended that was going to play in that. So that's not really, you know, something that they're going to, I would say, you know, bring people back together, right? And then, you know, the rumors, they say JJ Spahn, potentially the Phil's team, he's recruiting him, Tom Kim, Daniel Berger, and Seth Straka, and some of that stuff. But Minwoo Lee was on their radar, and he came out today, and he's going to stay on the PGA Tour. So I don't think it's any closer. It's unfortunate. I think we probably have to play one more season, and hopefully that stuff eventually comes back. But they've got the money and the means to make it work, and the PGA Tour seems to be plodding along as well. The talent's there to replace. I mean, as we know how deep the fields are. I just wish the Tour... these guys realize for the fan, you know, they're really doing a disservice to the fan, and there's got to just be a way to figure out to come back. But I don't think they're any closer. I think we're going to have another sort of split year coming up. It'll just be interesting to see who's going to, you know, if they would have gone to 72 holes to start, they would have not have had to spend this much money to get players. They would have gotten a lot of players to go over, because they would have initially probably gotten some more world ranking points out of the game. Yeah. So, yeah.
That was their whole shtick initially, was the LIV 54. So, you know, they hung their hat on that, and it was a mistake. Hey, speaking of the DP World Tour, what a tournament at the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. And Aaron Rye held off, we beat Tommy Fleetwood in a playoff, held off Rory McIlroy, one of the Hoggard brothers. I mean, it was a impressive win for him, because there's probably not a better player in the world right now than Tommy Fleetwood. So kind of give us a recap of that one.
Yeah, Aaron Rye is the guy that has got iron covers and uses gloves, rain gloves to play with.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing with a 7-year-old driver. He's got the castle tee. So, yeah, for him to win, he's got a lot of game, though. Very polite grinder, and, you know, went about his own way to beat those guys. And that's huge. I mean, that is, like you said, a big win. And that's win number three for him as well on the DP World Tour. So that guy continues to improve and get better. Very quiet, doesn't have a lot of huge personality, but it's not the last you've seen of Aaron Rye.
And lastly, Alabama gets the win, Casey over LSU, but it was not the most visually entertaining game. It was a little bit sluggish, but do you feel like me that they're going to have to ramp it up a little bit on Saturday against Oklahoma?
I think probably, you know, the good news is the best game's still out there. I think the thing to look at, a lot of people I know are all upset about the running game, but, you know, we're 3-0 against the top three rushing offenses, the defenses it's faced, Missouri, Georgia, Vanderbilt, and I really do believe the best game is still out there for them. I mean, that's what's the good news. Not like, oh, they played their best game here. So
that's true.
I think we got our hands full this week, and we'll have our hands full against Auburn. They played a lot better, but you know, I think still it's just we're controlling our own destiny. Just win in advance. The parity has never been closer, and I think you see the spread, see the games, everything gets closer and closer. Now it's sort of like this is already the playoffs. Just continue to survive and advance and win, and who cares what the really score is, and just keep striving to play that best game.
Yeah. And I know you're good friends with Nate Oates, and boy, what a win for Alabama basketball on Saturday. Keep this to, about a minute because I got to go, but huge win. It's just one game. Alabama's in the middle of a brutal pre-conference schedule. Purdue coming in here this week, number one in the country, but Alabama was terrific on Saturday.
That was as entertaining as a game as I've seen, especially this early. I mean, how talented we are at guard. We are elite at guard, and really how hard they play. Testament to just the players and the coaches. That Medina thing that they've taken on is a really big deal. That was one of the most entertaining games, breakneck pace, and then that win will go a long way in seeding time, and here comes another number one coming in. So I expect big things out of the Tide this year. This is an exciting time to be a Bama basketball fan.
All right. Thank you, Casey.
Gary.
All right, 10:52. Before we take the time out, I want to remind you, lunch is right around the corner, and I got a lot of neat spots for lunch. How about trying one of them today? In fact, you could have already gone there for breakfast, brunch, or lunch. That's Brick and Spoon, downtown at Timberson Square, open from 7 to 2, 7 days a week. Great varied menu. I love their omelets. I love their pancakes.
Or visit meswins.com. I've got this.
No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the quality of legal services performed by other lawyers.
Life doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages,
language. Save up to 50% on your Babbel subscription when you sign up at Babbel.com. That's Babbel.com to save up to 50%. Babbel.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Cold and windy today. The sky partly to mostly sunny, the high 41. For tonight, we go way below freezing. The sky clear, the low 23. Tomorrow, sunny with a warmer afternoon, the high in the low 50s at 52. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 38 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Never miss a moment of the action. Download the free Tide 100.9 app today.
All right, 10:56. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. Gary Harris, Wyatt Fulton. Wrapping it up, but a lot of discussion about Alabama football and how close they are to doing what they set out to do this year, which is be in position to win a championship. Now, I've had thoughts on the SEC championship game, all the conference championship games. I'm not a fan of them anymore. They were great. I loved them. But with the college football playoff, I'm not a fan. I that's an extra game that really doesn't need to be played. And people have said to me, well, you got to crown a champion. Well, crown it like they did before there was an SEC championship game. Back in the old days, the team with the best record during the regular season was the SEC champion. If there were two or three teams with the same record, then you had co-champions. I don't like playing these conference championship games now. In fact, this is, since I got a couple minutes here, Wyatt tells me before we have to close it out. And you can chime in, Wyatt, because you may not agree. What I would like to see done is do away with conference championship games and just go ahead and go to a 16-team playoff. Do away with byes and just go 16-8-4-2-1. That's what I would like to see done. I don't like the buys. I don't like the 16-team playoff. That's what they do in 1AA. You know, that's what they do in Division II and conference championship games. It's like listen, if Alabama makes it to Atlanta, they're in the college football playoff. So that's not the issue. The issue, though, is you have to play that extra game against a really good opponent, whether it's A&M or Georgia. And if you lose, you don't win the SEC championship, even if you go 8-0 and the next year you go to 9 games. That's even more of a reason for me not to want to do a conference championship game. But if you lose the game, then you don't get the bye. You may get a chance to play a home game in the playoff. I get that. But I just don't see, other than the money, why there's a need to play conference championship games anymore.
I liked last year where they were giving the byes to the conference champions, but then you had Boise State and Arizona State, who clearly were not two of the four best teams in the country with those byes. So I like that they're still giving the automatic qualifier to those conference champions, but at the same time, if you're Alabama and you're 10-2, you're in the playoffs no matter what. The automatic qualifier just for winning the SEC doesn't really mean much at that point, but I wouldn't hate revamping conference championships, or maybe putting a reason to go win the conference championship, right? Because if it's Alabama and A&M, neither of those teams have any reason to fight, basically, in that game. You're already locked into the playoffs. More than likely, one of those two is going to have a bye at that point. Mm-hmm. So there's really no reason to fight for that conference championship. And if you go out and lose, God forbid, knock on wood, Caden Proctor gets hurt in the SEC championship and you lose. Now you got to play in 2 weeks without your starting left tackle.
Or let's say that, again, you know, in basketball, they say, well, they have a tournament. But yeah, but the basketball, you're recognized as a regular season champion, too, and then a conference tournament championship. Let's say you go 8-0 in Alabama, and let's say you play A&M, who I think is playing as well as anybody in the country right now. Ohio State, Indiana obviously have arguments as well. But let's say that you go over there and you just get bashed. I mean, I don't say this is going to happen, but let's say you did, you know, all of a sudden your confidence is shaken going into the playoff. I mean, you know, so I don't know. I love the conference championship games for a long time. They were really neat, but I think they've served their purpose. And if you go to 9 conference games, and let's just say if you're Georgia, you're Ole Miss, and you know you're going to get in the playoff, other than the fact that it still means something to win an SEC championship, you're probably like, yeah, fine, we're good. We don't, you know, we're fine. We're not playing in the SEC championship game. You know what I'm saying? There's advantages to not having to play that game.
Point.
Yeah. You know, you don't have to. You got an extra week to prepare for your playoff game. You got more rest. So I think it's, to some degree, it's a detriment to playing a conference championship game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Gary Harris Show. The Miller's Edge coming up next. Catch me on TV tonight with your local sports on WVUA 23. And also, I'll have the Inside the Trenches podcast tonight with Rodney Orr, Wallace Gilberry, and Andre Smith at 7 o'clock. Real quickly, the YMCA of Tuscaloosa is where I work out. I'd love for you to join me. The Y is ready for you when you're ready for the Y, 2300 13th Street. For Wyatt Fulton, I'm Gary Harris. Thanks for listening to the Gary Harris Show. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you for listening.